Gather round, take a seat, relax. It's the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtzon, right here on 101.9 High FM.
Take a seat, relax, a day before Sukkot. I'm not so sure about take a seat and relax, but hopefully you have a listen wherever you are, running around building your sukkah, picking up your lulav, shopping for some kosher food, trying to balance your budget, and not happening, not this month, and whatever else you're trying to do in honor of Sukkot. I wish you Godspeed and the very best and Hatzlacha. And hopefully we could enter the zone, right? Unlike Pesach, that we have a month to get in the zone, Sukkot kind of lands on you. You're very much in the headspace of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and suddenly, what? Well, okay, 4 days. At least this year, and just the calendar works that there's 4 days that we could actually prepare. Last year, I think we had Shabbos and Friday amongst those 4 days that didn't allow for that much Sukkot prep. But each year with its calendar, each year with its zone, I think next year we're back into the same story again, Friday and Shabbos in between. But here we are. And every part of me wanted to say, oh, come on, do you really have to have a show today, Levi? There's so much going on. But first of all, it's such a privilege to be able to be on the Verbringen. And whenever opportunity, we can talk and learn together and discuss. It's an opportunity. But also, I think especially this year, right, we need to talk. Not because I have anything profound to say, but because the conversation has to happen. And if we could generate some thoughts, hopefully that will help us all get into the zone. Because let's be honest, it's a hard sukkah to get into the zone. It's a hard space. We just had the English anniversary, October 7th, a few days ago. And we're now getting close to the yard site, Shmini Atzeret, which is a week from Thursday, 9 days' time. So we're very much in a weird space. And please God, Mashiach come soon. As long as Mashiach's not here, it's going to be yearly an awkward space. And yet somehow we're going to have to find a way. And I'll just start with something personal. Not that personal always reflects, not that the micro always reflects on the macro, but I think it's a story that forced me to dig deep and learn to live with complexity. And I've shared it before, so if you've heard it, apologies, but I think it's appropriate now. Basically, a few years ago, my father passed away. It was a sudden passing. He was sick, but none of us expected death. It was young, in his young 60s. It was definitely not something we saw coming. And there were multiple things that happened in connection to his death that forced me and my family to hold on to multiple emotions on the same time. So, for example, he died on my mother's birthday, her Hebrew birthday, and in the family we celebrate our Hebrew birthday. That means every year the yard site is her birthday. There's no avoidance. It's the 3rd of Shabbat, January, February time, and there's nothing to do. Every year, it's already been 6 years. Call up my mom, wish her long life. Not really long life, because that's not really what they wish in America, but, you know, mention my dad. And then within the same phone call, try to shift to, oh, and happy birthday, mom. Small little example, but how do you have a birthday every year, milestone birthday? The first yard site was my mother's 60th, so literally, big number. That was the yard site. Then the 65th, and please God, many others. How do you hold it? Then there was the other factor that the day my father died was my wife was supposed to be flying to New York because her brother was getting married there. And I was going to babysit here in South Africa, babysit some of the kids, and she was going to take a few of the kids with her. And then literally, I get the phone call, the WhatsApp, actually, that my father died, and I had to, by the way, arrange a ticket. And on that night, my wife was flying with a wedding gown to her brother's wedding, and I was flying to my father's funeral. on the same flight. That stage was South African Airways, 9 p.m. flight. She's going to a wedding. I'm going to a funeral. And then there was my wife, thank God, fell pregnant, and the due date was on the yard site, and the first yard site, and trying to get my head around that. So first of all, I couldn't be at the yard site or my mother's birthday. But that wasn't the issue, of course. I mean, I'm going to be with my wife, but like, how do I hold it? So I'm thrilled that the baby came, or I'm devastated that's the yard site. What am I doing? And actually, I had to go talk to someone before because I just couldn't handle it. It was just so much. Thank God the baby came a few hours earlier. So literally the baby, I think the yard site was Monday night, Tuesday. So the baby was born early Monday morning. We're able to celebrate on Monday the baby. And then Tuesday, Monday night, sat with my friends and commemorated the yard site. But it was like that incredible amount of juxtaposition, just like so much in just one event, forced me to confront the big question, and that is, can a person hold multiple emotions at the same time? And the answer that came is, he has no other choice. Have to, right? A child struggles to hold multiple emotions at the same time. They could shift from emotions quickly. In other words, one minute they could scream and say, I hate you, mommy, and the next moment they could say, I love you, and give you the biggest hug. But in the moment that they're furious, they're absolutely furious and the world's come to an end. It's literally Armageddon. And when they're joyous, it's like the world is literally roses and colors and beautiful. They can only really hold one emotion at once. But one of the signs of maturity is the ability of holding multiple emotions. I could be sad and happy. I could do both. I could feel heartbroken and elevated. Right? You could stand under the chuppah marrying off your child and feel so grateful and thrilled and sad that your kid's moving out of the house. Often people feel guilty about those conflicting emotions, but one of the most profound Jewish laws, halachot, I've ever learned, which is just mind-boggling, but every time I learn it again, it just strikes me. The Maimonides brings it down, Rambam brings it down, and other sages, is if someone loses a parent and the parent leaves them an inheritance, a substantial amount of money, then the person, the child, makes two blessings when they hear about it, about the death. The first one's the blessing we all know, and that is Dayan HaMet, blessed is God, are you God, true judge. And then you make a blessing, HaTov HaMetiv, God is good, the one who does good or and gives good. And you're like, the good God and the one who does good. And you're like, huh, really? You just lost your mom. You just lost your dad. And the answer is because Judaism, Torah is not denying the fact that you just earned $5 million in your bank account. And unless you're lying to yourself, there is some sense of relief and maybe a bit of gratitude. But what do you mean? But I'm devastated. My dad died. Yeah, you are. But who are you fooling? You're devastated. And you just know that your house is paid off. And you could hold both. And when I share with people that halacha, like people originally, like they're like gobsmacked or like, what? Like that's so cynical. I don't see it as cynical. I think it's incredibly profound and honest. It's brutally honest. And as we're getting closer to Shmini Atzeret, we're getting closer to Sukkot, we're getting close to, and we're in the month of October and everything it brings up. The message I'm trying to impart today is that we have no choice other than finding joy. V'samachta b'chagecha, we have to bring joy. At the same time, there is sadness. No one's denying it. But we can hold a lot together. As we'll continue exploring after this song, it's called Leman Yedu, a very upbeat song on Sukkot that taken from the Torah that God tells us to build Sukkot so that we remember that God protected us in the desert. It's a beautiful song from Mati Steinmetz here on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtzon on 101.9 Chai FM.
The holiday that we're about to start, the Chag we're about to start, is Sukkot. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtzon of Linksfield Shul, and over here we're exploring Sukkot 2024. a year after October 7th, and the determination, the obligation, and the choice to be joyous on this time. There's three mitzvot, there's three commandments fundamentally that take place on Sukkot. To build a sukkah and live in it, live in a sukkah. To shake the four species, the lulav, the etrog, the hadas, and arava. And joy, v'samachta b'chagecha. Three times it says you should be joyous. Specifically on this chag, the chag of Sukkot. In general, when the Torah refers to chag, we all know that word, chag, the holiday. It just says chag. By default, it's Sukkot. Sukkot is the chag, the holiday. The time of joy. And last year, the time of joy was tarnished. Big stain. Big cut of the heart. And multiple other ways of describing, but indescribable, actually. And now we're approaching, in just over 24 hours, 28 hours, 29 hours, we're in the time of joy. It's Man Simchateinu, the time of joy. And the question that we're asking is, will we find the ability to be joyous? But the question before that is, do I want to be joyous? Do I want to be joyous? It's not an easy question to ask. It's much easier for many people, not all people. Some people are naturally happy, you know, go-lucky kind of characters, but a lot of people, joy is harder than seriousness. I often laugh that you never see someone taking a whiskey before a funeral so that they could feel sad. But they'll take a whiskey at a wedding so that they could get on the dance floor. Most of the time they drink the whiskey and they don't even get on the dance floor. But the point is, most of us need, not all of us, but most of us, need assistance for joy. You need whiskey and tequila and wine. And the band, and strobe lights, and a whole menu, and a whole experience, and a DJ, and a dance floor, right? In order to feel real joy, and even then, you go to a wedding, how many people are on the dance floor now? Of the people on the dance floor, how many are enjoying themselves? Yeah, you go to a funeral, everyone just showed up. There's no strobe lights. There's no major event in terms of production. And everyone's serious. No one needs assistance to be serious. Now you'll say the funeral's sad. Fine, but the wedding is happy. You know, if the funeral's enough to make me sad without any assistance, then why the wedding? Do I need any assistance? I should just be like, yay, they're getting married. Woo, so exciting. Who needs music, right? Like the good old shtetl. I just put my hand on the hand of the shoulder of my friend and just dance the night away. Very few people do that. Joy is hard. So it's not only a question this year in the October 7th shadow, you know, whether I could find joy. The question is last year, before October 7th. It's not as if joy was always an easy thing for most of us. It's awkward. To be joyous means you have to get out of yourself. You have to not take yourself too seriously. To be serious is actually very cool, right? You stand there, serious face, solemn. You're very much aware of yourself in a moment of seriousness. I'm not talking about deep sadness, but when you're serious, you're very aware, you're self-conscious, you're aware of how you look and how you're presenting yourself, and are you put together, and are you in the zone, and are you appropriate, etc. Joy, on the other hand, the more joyous you get, it's about letting go of self. Now, joy is not necessarily that person doing cool dance moves on the floor, although that might bring joy to others. Joy, laughter, happiness is when you let go of yourself, when you go out of yourself. You can't be very self-conscious and be joyous, right? If you remember in school, right, the kid who's not self-conscious and breaks out laughing and all the other awkward teenagers are looking at them like, oh my gosh, you're so weird. You laughed at your teacher's joke. How dare you? What an absolute, you know, so uncool. Because it's not cool to laugh. Laughter means that you're losing control. You're letting yourself go. And joy is the same. So independent for a moment of October 7th, you have to ask yourself, do I even want to be joy? Do I like joy? Is it something I strive for? I know a few people who do. Not too many. And once I make a decision that joy is the right thing to do, it's the moral calling of the hour, then I could ask myself how to handle the conflict of the sadness of the yard site of October 7th, of everything else that's going on. But the first thing is asking that question, what do I want? Do I want to be joyous? Do I see the value of joy? Do I want to be able to have fun? Not silly, not low-class fun, not trashy, but spiritual joy, upliftment, a joy that comes out of humility, a joy that comes from not taking myself too seriously, a joy that comes from the fact that we just went through Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and we renewed our bond with Hashem, and now we're celebrating that joy. We're celebrating the fact that the relationship is on stable footing again, and we are screaming at Ashrenu, how lucky we are, how blessed we are, how grateful we are. Can we feel gratitude? Can we feel gratitude? In the last year, we felt a lot of feelings, but how many of us have felt gratitude? Oh, come on, Rabbi, the anti-Semitism, the war, the terror attack that happened this morning, the attack that happened 2 days ago. What gratitude? Again, if I can't hold multiple emotions, sadness and gratitude for the fact that we're here, we're still talking. Here I am. This is a live show. Well, if you're listening to this on Tuesday the 15th, it's a live show. You're listening. I'm talking. That's a lot of gifts going on. I'm able to speak. You're able to listen. We're alive. We had food this morning, or if we didn't have this morning, we had last night. Most of the things in our life are still working. There's so much that still works, and there's so much to be grateful for. And Sukkot is a very big challenge. It's a very, very big challenge. Think about it. We've had in the calendar, in the Jewish calendar, since, let's say, Shavuot, which is the last Chag we had, we had a lot of times for seriousness. We had the Omer, that you're not allowed to have music. Okay, so that's serious. So it's annoying, can't have music, but it's not that hard. Okay, fine. Then we had, after Shavuot, not too long after, we have the 3 weeks. We have Tisha B'Av. We have Elul. We have Rosh Hashanah. We have the 10 days of Tshuva. We have Yom Kippur. That was a lot of serious time. The last time of the year that we actually had full-on go bonkers joy is Purim. And Purim's a very different energy, but they're both joy. So the last time that we actually had a mitzvah specifically to be joyous is 6 months ago, Purim, 7 months ago. There's a lot more days on the calendar that demand seriousness, sadness, apprehension. So now is the real challenge. Now that I'm reaching the crescendo of this month, of Chagim, do I want to feel joy? Do I want to enjoy myself? Right? Every rabbi around the world gets up in the shul on Yom Kippur. Well, they used to, maybe they don't anymore, and say, guys, don't just come to shul when it's serious and we don't offer food. Come in a week from now. Come from Sukkot. Don't run off to the bush. Stay in shul. Enjoy great food, great vibe, great sukkah, great everything. But the fact is, no matter how many rabbis have given that speech, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur still get substantially larger crowds than Sukkot and Purim. Somehow religion feels more associated with seriousness than joy. As one guy once told me, he says, Rabbi, if I want joy, I think I know how to do it better than you. The truth is that in many ways he does. This guy knows how to party. Okay. You know, I don't own a yacht. And I'm not bringing $100K worth of whiskey to the party. And I'm not having, you know, DJ lights and God knows what else going on. We have a magnificent sukkah, but most people feel like if I want fun, that's outside religion, right? Religion, fun? Seriously? Religion is reflection, seriousness, obligation, guilt, intensity, lectures, music, somber music. A joy? Really? Really, Rabbi? Really? You really think you're going to compete with a great bar? A great pub? A great beach event? Nah, come on. Answer is yes. Of course religion is joy. What do you think religion is? Religion is meaning. And meaning is joy. If you have a meaningful life, you're joyous. You're grateful. How awesome. I mean, my life is meaningful. It's a natural byproduct of a meaningful life. If someone has a meaningful life and they don't have joy, then they're not really grateful for their meaning and they don't actually find deep meaning in their meaning. So you're not really plugged in. By default, if you're enjoying your religion, if you find it that gives you purpose and direction, then of course, a few times a year at least, you'll burst out in joy and sit there saying, Ashreinu, how lucky I am, how blessed I am. So that's the call of the time. The call of the time is to realize that life is bigger than the sadness I'm feeling. That there's bigger stuff to this. And there's a song I want to share with you now. It actually just came out a few days ago. It's a great song by my favorite songwriter, Phoebe Rottenberg. And the song is called The Neshama Lives Forever. It was a song written for children who lost a parent at a young age. And I love the fact that they took this, what could be a somber idea, and gave it a very upbeat energy, as you'll hear in just a moment. This is Neshama Lives Forever by A.B. Rothenberg and Joey Newcomb on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Fabringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson. Did you hear that upbeat song? But the Neshama lives forever. It's a very somber idea, the idea that... you know, we're talking about people who pass away, and death is not the end in terms of soul, but it's a hard idea. And like, I would have thought that song is a bit of a serious song, but to his credit, he chose an upbeat song. And that's really why I decided to share that song with you today. Because that's it. Like, the neshama lives forever. Like, there's a way of feeling joy when the more meaning a person has, the more perspective we've developed over this past year on what's going on, even if we don't understand fully, but we have meaning, we have purpose. You know, that's the gift of a religion that's first of all godly and 3,300 plus years old. It has a lot of wisdom. You know, one of the foolish things of the modern world is where we think that all wisdom was born when I woke up this morning or today, right? And whatever is new and vogue and cool is fantastic. And everything that, you know, gets likes on Instagram and TikTok must be profound. And, you know, if that great rabbi from the Talmud hasn't gotten likes on Instagram, then don't know what to tell you, but he's really not cool. He's like, you know, seriously, can you imagine Abaye and Rava posting on Instagram? How popular do you think they would be? Barely, if at all. So, never mind, they can't be profound. I mean, look at this person. 4 million people watched our video within 3 minutes after they posted it. They must be profound. And that stupidity, that foolish perspective that we have today, that everything that's popular must be profound, and everything new is cool. It's, you know, it's modern, it's woke, it's must be really, really profound, is rubbish. I'll give you an example. Trevor Noah gets a lot of likes. And a lot of his ideas, especially about Israel, are absolute rubbish. And I know that he was the darling of the community for a while, you know, a South African that made it popular around the world. But wow, so much rubbish. And just because he's liked all around the world and millions of people and he's one of us doesn't mean he's actually saying anything, or most of the things he's saying are actually worth listening to. And this is important because we have to realize that wisdom and truth comes from an old, rich tradition. And people that have lived life much longer and have gone through multiple experiences and have held on to something, right? Right. So many of the ideas that are cool now within 5 years are going to be totally useless and forgotten and despised. And yet we have a tradition that goes back thousands of years. And if you tap into the tradition, you open up a Chumash, you open up a Tanakh, you open up a Talmud, you open up the wisdom of our mystics and the wisdoms of our Hasidic masters and the wisdom of our philosophers and, you know, character development and all those incredible teachers over centuries and millennia, you will not only feel sadness. You'll feel a lot of meaning and purpose and perspective, right? One of the stories about this, you know, that was going around this year was around this woman who lost her husband, Elisha, and she lost she's left with six children, and she is unbelievable. Seriously, this woman is unbelievable in her perspective about life and purpose, and she really, really understands. I'm just looking for her name. I think her name's Hadass Levenstein. Yeah, that's her name. And you should Google her. She's a dynamite, absolute riot. And there's a story that right after her husband dies, they call her from the radio, and she sounds pretty, you know, put together, and the kids are talking in the background, and they say, and the radio host says, "Where are you, ma'am?" And she says, "I'm on the way to go identify my husband's body." And like, he just goes quiet. He's like, "What? You're actually talking normally while you're on the way to go identify your husband's body?" And she's like, "Yes, I have a husband in heaven now, and he's watching over me." And this happened like at the beginning of the war. It's like 9-10 months later. And I've seen so much of her content. It's like unbelievable. Unbelievable. Seriously, unbelievable. And they ask her, like, how in the world does a person do this? And her answer is, because I have meaning. My why is so strong that I'm able to help. And most of us, yes, we suffered loss, but not that personal, like losing a spouse from this war. And if she can, so can we. And it's not so much that we can, it's do we want to? And that's really what I want to, you know, end the show with is, do I want to be joyous? Do I feel like I'm virtue signaling by showing how sad I am a year later? Do I feel like it's like my moral mandate to walk around with a long face every time something negative happens, especially to our community, to our nation? Or do I feel that's the moral obligation for me to keep on living, besamachta, to find joy, not despite, not by avoiding, but because that is the take-home message. That's the take-home message. Live. V'damayich chayi, through your blood, live. By that, every bris, we say this. Child, we just, you know, took a drop of your blood, but this will lead to life. That the sacrifice leads to life. That the pain gives birth to life. That is our ethos. That's the wisdom, not the wisdom. It's part, just one little sliver of wisdom that we've developed over thousands of years of a nation that's been through a lot. Is b'damai chayi. You can find joy. V'gilu b'rada. You can feel joy while shaking inside. You can hold a lot. Not by avoiding, but by realizing there's purpose, there's meaning. That I am in the hands of God. I am in the hands of Hashem. I am in the hands of a father I don't always understand why he does what he does, or maybe never understand why he does what he does, but I know that's him that's doing it. And that itself gives comfort. Because it's not random. It's not madness. It's not chaos. It's not Armageddon. It's God. And if I'm in his hands, doesn't mean I won't feel lots of feelings. I'm human. But I'll always try to come back to meaning and joy. So I want to wish us all just a few hours, 28 hours before Sukkot, that we should try, really try, to find joy. Not joy, silly joy, not joy by avoidance, meaningful joy. Joy through meaning, joy through purpose, joy through intention, joy through mindfulness, joy through mitzvah, joy through Hashem, joy through connection. Wishing everybody a Chag Sameach, good Yom Tov, and please God, may we truly see joy in our world. Only good news. Please God, Mashiach now. Good Yom Tov, everybody, and thank you.